myself that took me a long time to get here.
Both parents have spoken with each other, and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other, and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
But these fellas will get such a shit shock next Saturday evening that we'll put them back in their asses for 10 years.
So, Trevor, we know you won a minor All-Ireland, an under-21 All-Ireland, 2 senior All-Irelands, 3 All-Stars, Footballer of the Year twice, played 47 championship games in a row, unbroken. But there's only one place that I want to start, and that's the sleeveless jerseys in 1999. Can you explain how this started?
I'll try and be as brief as I can, Colm. 99 at Easter, I was recovering from cruciate ligament surgery, and the Ireland under-17s were going to Australia to play the compromise rules, and I was asked to be the physiotherapist, and I said, 2 weeks in Australia, lovely, yeah, I'll do it. When I was over there, I had bought a couple of the jerseys, like Essendon, St Kilda, you know, the short sleeves, and I used to wear them with training with Meade when I came back then, and the summer was a good one that year, and night before the Leinster final, Ollie Murphy said to me, God, it'd be great if we'd sleeve this jerseys for the game tomorrow against Dublin, just for the crack, you know, and just set me mind thinking, and I went home, and she'd have a load of number 11 jerseys at home in the bag, and I just cut the sleeves off, and I said, I'll go with that, and that was it.
Right, but you didn't use your own jersey the next day, or did you cut one off the new jerseys that you'd get for that Leinster final?
Yeah, that's it. You know, you'd get a jersey every game, you know, so I had a number of key pack Bank of Ireland number 11s, you know, so yeah, it was just one I'd worn probably the previous day, the semi-final, and cut the sleeves off, and I didn't stick the jersey onto me until we were running out the tunnels and hoping to see, and I suppose it was very unlike me, you know, that wasn't my style at all to stand out.
But I thought, see, I had in my head maybe you're in the toilets cutting the jersey before the game and all this kind of thing. But like, I mean, would it have been a distraction for the final to be, you know, hiding the jersey in your bag and not putting it on before the match? Do you know?
No, you'd know yourself. Sometimes you'd be warming up in the dressing room in the club park. You mightn't have your jersey on. It'd be warm, it'd be hot, you know. So
yeah.
You need to stick the jersey on before you go out, you know. But I'd spent a few minutes at home that previous night, the Saturday night. Didn't make a brilliant job of it when I had my handiwork.
Yeah, you left a bit of yellow. Left a bit of yellow, or a kind of a band of yellow after the green, didn't you?
Yeah, I didn't get any calls from Louis Copeland subsequently asking me to join him, but. I suppose it was just very unlike me, you know, but I suppose the way I look at it, I was coming back from cruciate ligament injury and I'd worked really, really hard. Like, I was putting in maybe 4 hours a day rehabilitation. I really wanted to get back playing, and I'd missed the game and I was hungry, you know, and I suppose I just felt that year, I have a load of work done here. I have more work done than any player in Ireland, you know. I've worked harder, I've put more into it, and confidence was high, and I suppose I felt just in that season, I can do this, that I can actually wear this jersey and still play really well, you know. So I'm not saying I had that confidence every year, but just that was my mindset at the time.
Yeah, I used to pull my jersey. I never had the guts to cut the sleeves, but I'd roll them up. But that would distract me because they would fall down every now and then. It was a bit kind of annoying, but it's definitely more comfortable. Is that because on a hot day, the jersey is flapping around at your arm. It is a lot more comfortable. Like, I mean, I'm surprised. Well, obviously the summers in Ireland don't kind of lend themselves to the Aussie rules type jerseys.
Yeah, the jerseys were loose at that stage. Be loose on you, you know, and they were heavy enough material. But we got 2 early frees from around the 21-yard line on the left, and I missed both of them. And, you know, you're thinking, what an idiot you are, you know, wearing a fancy jersey and missing simple frees. And then the third one I got was way over on the right. It was a way more difficult free. And, like, you know, at that stage, you're allowed to miss one or two. But if you miss 3, well, then someone else is going to take the next one. So it was really pressure on. I managed to get the third one, and thankfully we went on to win the game, you know. But there's a risk to doing things like that.
Yeah, and you obviously did it for practical reasons in the Leinster final. Then it was raining in the All-Ireland final. It was more of a superstition maybe then that continued it on until the All-Ireland final.
Yeah, I played well eventually that day against Dublin, and then reasonably well against Armagh, the semi-final. And, you know, you kind of say, well, gee, I'm not going to change anything now, you know, even though it was a wet day for the All-Ireland final. You know, and then the county board and Sean were coming under pressure from the CCC, you know, that you have to, everyone has to be in uniform, you know, has to present themselves the same.
Well, for the parade and everything, yeah.
That's the correct thing. I agree with that. And there was a fine issued for the first game and it was doubled the second game and it's going to be doubled again, you know. And Sean did say to me, listen, you know, let's just wear the normal jersey. And I kind of said, yeah, no problem, Sean, I will. And then I kind of, you know, went back on it then. I stuck on the lucky jersey, we'll call it. And it was the wrong thing to do, you know, man of Sean. I'd given him my word, you know, and then I went back on it. And, you know, even though we won the All-Ireland, you know, I'd say he was a bit disappointed in me for doing it. And, you know, part of me says, you know, should have done it for once or twice and then just left it.
I'd say he got over it. One feature of that 99 Leinster final was Ollie Murphy's goal and the ball you gave him. It was like a long diagonal ball off the outside of your left. And, like, I mean, even the All-Ireland final, one of the points Graham Geraghty got, like, it was, again, a real clever diagonal ball off your left, but from kind of on the left-hand side back across the goal. And we see a lot of them in the game now. But back then, that wasn't the norm. You were kind of ahead of your time with those diagonal balls.
Yeah, maybe so. You know, I'd started off with wing forward and you play a certain role there. You're tracking up and back, you're tackling, you're working hard. When you post my third and fourth year, you know, I moved to centre forward and it's a different position. You have to be in that area, you know. And, you know, when we had Ollie Murphy, Graham Geraghty, Tommy Dowd in the full forward line, you know, even Colin O'Rourke there in the early years with me and with the club, you know, it makes sense that you get the ball into those fellas, you know, and as kindly as you can. You could give it to Colm anyway, you know.
Yeah.
Tommy Dowd was good at winning his ball. In fairness, Graham and Ollie were too. But, you know, like Ollie was a great man. He'd love to play in behind the corner back and he'd have the hand pointing out, you know, hit it left. And by the time he'd have dropped the ball onto your foot, he'd have the hand pointing to the right and you'd have 0.1 of a second to change your angle on it. And sometimes it worked and sometimes it didn't, but yeah, I suppose my game evolved into, you know, trying to get the ball and get it into those fellas as you know, as accurately as you could. And, you know, when they ended up getting goals and scores, you know, then people are saying, oh, gee, what's that? A great pass by Giles, you know, but sure, if they'd kicked it wide, there wouldn't have been a word about the pass, you know. So you got a bit of reflected glory from how good those fellas were and the scores that they got.
Yeah, but even in the All-Ireland final against Cork, like, I mean, Geraghty wasn't known for being good in the air, but when it comes in diagonally, even Ollie Murphy, you know, it's given them that chance, you know. And I just remember we did a lot of nostalgic games and stuff. There was no diagonal balls going in the early 90s. It was kind of evolving, and I think you were at the forefront of that.
Yeah, I didn't realise I was, you know. From an early age, my dad would have had me kicking with left and right, you know, and just at home kicking with himself in the back garden, you know, from when you're a kid. And I suppose it, you know, it was a kind of a natural thing for me. And a brilliant ball winner. It was a massive help for me having John McDermott, you know, around midfield. And to be fair to John, he could catch a ball and, you know, but he'd give it to me, you know. He could have kicked it in himself.
Right.
But he's very selfless, you know. He just laid off to me. And, you know, once I got it, I could do some things with it, you know. But certainly it was a big, I wouldn't have had the influence if I hadn't, you know, the likes of John or, you know, strong midfielders around me.
Yeah, and I suppose even like the role of the centre forward in the 90s was, like, half of it was that, getting in under the breaks and making sure you're around that area.
Yeah. No, I was pretty good on the breaks, you know. The thing, I think if you look at a lot of footballers, you go to a lot of games and you're watching the way it breaks, you know, that, you know, you can learn a bit from it, you know. So I was quite kind of good at getting into those areas. My hands were reasonably quick. Now, you get muscle out of it very easily too at the same time, you know. But that was the job, yeah. And, you know, people call it the dirty ball, you know, as if it's like, you know, a very difficult thing to do or a very brave thing to do. It's like, it's not at all. Like, you just get yourself in there and get your hands on it and, you know, try and get out of there if you can, or get the ball out of there quickly.
What was your skill then for winning the breaks? Because I was always terrible at winning breaks. Did you come around in front of McDermott, or did you go to the sides, or did you come across him? You know, like, I mean, I never quite figured out how to win them.
Yeah, well, if the ball was kicked the Cork goalie over my head out to midfield, well, chances are whoever is going to break back to me, you know, rather than break the other side. We didn't have any flicks or any systems that would go left or right. John would be trying to catch it, or Nigel Crawford, Jimmy McGuinness, whoever. But I suppose I had good reactions. You know, you kind of get yourself in the general area and you have to be able to, you know, react, and it might be a reflex, whatever, a couple of yards left or right. Hands are quick, you know. So you have good reactions. But, you know, I would have gone to a lot of games growing up, looked at a lot of TV and that, you know. And I think, you know, you can learn new games where, you know, there's a high chance the ball is going to break in that area. So that's what I'd put it down to.
Yeah, in 1999 you missed a penalty. In 1996 you scored one of the best penalties I've ever seen in an All-Ireland final. You missed a penalty in 01. You missed a penalty in 1997 against Kildare in the replay. Am I missing any other penalties? Am I not giving you any?
Yeah, and like, you know, with free kicks, there was very few free kicks I missed, you know, that I should have got, or pressure ones. I missed a couple in my first Leinster final in 1994 when I was 19, you know. But apart from that, I was good on frees that I needed to get. But I did score plenty of penalties, but you know, there was a lot of high-profile misses, you know. And I suppose I had a favourite corner, and you get known for it after a while. I looking at the goals, I liked to go to the right and curl it in, you know. I always found if I was pulling it back to the other side that I pulled it too far and it curled wide, you know. So bookkeeper's got on my favourite corner. And the one in 99 against Cork, I was just more focused on just to make sure I hit the target. I didn't hit any power. It bounced three times before Kevin had collected it, you know. The one against Garland, the one I didn't. I said, "Well, I won't make the same place." I hit it with conviction. Man, changed my side. What I done with other years, but just pulled wide. Once no regret because I hit it with conviction. But I had seen photographs afterwards taken from the goals, and the goalkeeper, you know. He left loads of room on my favourite side, you know, like literally if I had to stuck with my side, you know,
right,
that was goal, you know, and we're poor at it, or, you know, but if I had goal had 2 points in, it was maybe 10 goals, you know, and often got out of games where we weren't in the best on them, and who knows what would have happened, you know, that day if it got a draw or something, got back a replay, because having hammered Kerry in the semi-final, you know, myself, a lot of us, we were missing a bit of edge that day in the final that you need. And maybe if you got a replay and got goal the next day, different team. But anyway, I suppose everyone has a bet or two on a match to play that one again. You know,
So, yeah, your favourite side was the right-hand side for a right-footed kicker. That's probably technically the more difficult kick. You know, usually you see lads' go-to penalties is whacking it down into the bottom left.
Yeah, well, for me, you know, if you could aim for the right-hand post and just put a little bit of curl on it, you know, that's a difficult arc for a goalkeeper to get his hands to. Where if you're pulling it back to the left-hand side, you're starting it closer to him and then it's going away from him. So, I always felt the danger was, you know, put too much curl on it and you'd pull it wide. So
yeah.
That's just what worked for me. You know, I suppose I hit a penalty a bit like a free kick. Now, you know, if you hit it just straight on with power, then that's a different thing, you know. But the penalty nowadays is a bit closer. You know, you shouldn't be missing the penalty nowadays, but even back when I was playing, you know, if you hit it well enough, it shouldn't be saved, you know.
Yeah.
Low with enough power into a corner, it shouldn't be saved, you know. So.
Were you the penalty taker in 96? Because I was watching your Lake Regale and there seemed to be a bit of confusion about who was going to take that.
It would have been, yeah. Would have been. Scored one against Mayo in a league quarter final in 96 against John Madden, the same goalkeeper.
Same side again.
Went to the other side and went high, actually, down in Hyde Park. We lost to Mayo in that league quarter final. In the All-Ireland final, I went to the side, as you know, I did. And as with John there, he's putting the hands up saying, gee, maybe I thought it was the other side, you know.
Yeah.
Scored one in a Sigerson Cup final, actually, the same year. We had Anthony Finnerty and David Nestor playing from Mayo on that team. So I got an odd one now, but definitely some high-profile misses on penalties.
Yeah, that 96 final, like, I mean, in a way, winning it in 99 was fantastic, because when people think of the 1996 All-Ireland final, they think of the row. Like, it's the first thing. There's been so much nostalgia that's been done on it, and maybe in a weird way, it's overshadowed that win.
Probably not for me anyway. When you look back,
taking it over, yeah, rather than overshadowed.
Yeah, like, you know, at the end of that game, in the last minute, Mayo were trying to get an equaliser, and I just remember thinking, like, please just let me win an All-Ireland, you know, whatever we have to do here, you know. And a minute later, the final whistle was blown, you know, and it's a magnificent feeling, you know. When you look back on the footage, the row was terrible. Like, it went on for a long time, and there was plenty of action in it, you know, and for an All-Ireland final, it shouldn't have happened, you know. But, like, we were young. I was 21 at the time. You'd grown up in the 80s looking at the Meath teams winning All-Ireland. It's all you wanted to do, you know, and you'd finally done it. So I suppose the 99 one, there was no controversy. There was no row. You know, we won it, you know, I think, wouldn't say convincingly, but, you know, we got credit for being the best team that year, you know. And that was a nice way to do it, you know. I think we got 7 All-Stars that year. And, you know, it was, I suppose that was important we did it that way as well, you know.
Yeah. The row went on so long, you even got sucked down into it yourself. You ended up boxed off with Colin McManaman, not a fella I would be advising to get kind of boxed off with in the row.
Yeah, like, Peter Ford, who was a Mayo selector, I remember meeting Peter a few months later, and he was kind of joking that, you know, that Mayo started the row down the wrong end, you know, that he reckoned their defenders were better boxers than their forwards, you know. But, I ended up in the middle of it, throwing a few shapes, and sure, I wouldn't say I hurt anyone now. Noel Kennelly absolutely flattened me, you know. Caught me a great one, but, like, you know, you just get up straight away, you know. You wouldn't want to be staying on the ground too long anyway, but you know, you just got up. And you know, my feeling was, once that row was over, like, and it was only 10 minutes into the game, like, there wasn't a thing happened after that. Everyone had got everything off their chest, and it was just down to football after that. And you know, at half time you weren't saying, geez, that was a great row, or, you know, you were focused on the game. And, you know, Pat McEnany, people say, should have done this, should have done that. You know, the game settled down, and, you know, there was no hassle after that.
Well, that was it. And, like, I mean, talking about Colin McManaman, the big, obviously, play from your point of view at the end of the replay was that you turned him over. You intercepted his hand pass, gave the ball down to Brendan Riley, who scored the winning point. He had a lot to do, in fairness. It was a brilliant score. But Mayo were on the attack then, Trevor. Like, I mean, that was a huge, huge interception at that time.
Yeah. And again, we wanted to do the thing that we kind of put at, you know. You know, I didn't score many fantastic goals or brilliant points, you know, but you know, it was a good tackler, you know. I say my hands were good, and Colin was coming to me, you know, everyone was tired, and just his solo was probably a little bit high, and I flicked it away from him and gathered it. Pass it gave to Brendan was grand. Now, put him in the corner flag, which wasn't brilliant, but, you know, things like that give me, you know, a lot of satisfaction. A good tackle. You know, as you said, they were on the attack, and it left us then getting the winning score. So, my hand-eye coordination was decent, you know, and that was an element of my game, you know. And you're trying to coach kids now at underage, you know, you're kind of just saying, you know, just tackle with your hands, you know, Waitley hops the ball or solos it, and when it's in the air, that's your chance to get in and knock it away, and all the better if you can go and pick it up then when it's billed. So yeah, that was, I suppose, one of my things I was good at.
And did that, when did that work rate really come to the fore? Because I know you were saying that the 96 Leinster final was your favourite ever game, and that a feature of that game, I think you were wing forward, was a lot of work you were doing that day. Is that when you kind of upped the work rate in 96, you know, and followed that through?
Yeah, so of all the games I played with Meade, I only ever got man of the match twice, you know. And
really?
That you know, the fun the game used to do. You get a Festina watch, you know, and engraved on the back. It was lovely, but I only ever got two of them. But that was one of them. And, you know, I suppose I worked hard that day. And that comes from getting beaten the previous year by 10 points and having to listen, you know, in college and UCD, listen to a lot of, you know, people around Dublin, you know, slagging you off. And, you know, we hadn't Colm O'Rourke the following year, so we knew unless we worked really hard, we'd no chance, you know. So I suppose that was my third year playing with Meath, and we hadn't won anything, you know, at senior level. As well, I just said, listen, whatever happens, I'm going to work really, really hard, you know. And if Dublin beat us, well, then Dublin would be walking off with the cup, but they'd be saying, well, your man Giles, at least he never give up, or he tried hard, you know. Or you kind of have to earn people's respect, you know. That was the stage I was at that point. So, yeah, it's a game I'd love to see again. I've seen some of the old games over. I've actually never seen that one again. But, yeah, I feel I worked really, really hard in that game.
Right, because like, by your own admission, you didn't play well in the 94-95 Leinster finals against Dublin. Now, you were very young coming into a team like that. Were you being a bit hard on yourself, or were you expecting too much from yourself?
The 95 final, I worked hard actually as well. They were beaten by 10 points. But I took some positives from that I worked hard, you know. And even when we were 7, 8, 9 points down, I was still showing for kickouts and whatnot, you know. But, you know, at the same time, you get beaten by 10 points, you're thinking, we are way off the standard here that's required, you know. And you spend the winter, you know, like back in those days, sure, you'd be just doing press-ups and sit-ups, whatever, trying to make yourself stronger. There was no gym working in those days. You know, the 94 Leinster final, my first one, I was 19. Yeah, I had done fine in the league that year and in the other Leinster Championship matches, but yeah, that was, you know, at the highest level. And my cheeks were red, I was tired, you know. Mark and Paul Curran, he was a terrific player, you know. Went away from that thinking, not that I played bad, just didn't get on the ball, didn't do anything, you know, didn't contribute in any way. So, but yeah, you go away and say, right, okay, this is what you need to do if you want to play at that level, and you go off and do it.
Well, that's the thing, I suppose, coming from minor under 21 to the very pinnacle of Dublin, who at that time were the, you know, the biggest team in Leinster, and you were, you know, knocking on the door. They took you over. Like, it didn't get any bigger than playing Dublin in a Leinster final. So it was a fairly big level to jump up to from under 21.
It was. And, you know, more than yourself, you've success at underage, you know, and that's great, you know. So one that we were lucky in Meath, like I came onto a team where there was a number of leaders there, experienced players, you know. You were just playing wing forward, you just had to do your own job, you weren't expected to win the game, you know, and that's an ideal position to come into. And in fairness to Sean, he picked me straight away and kept picking me, you know, and never once took me off or never dropped me, you know. So you know, probably should have that year, probably should have been taken off that day. Knowing Johnny, probably felt, well, this might affect his fellow's confidence if I take him off. So he kind of left me on. And maybe in the long term, he got a return on that investment, you know. But playing half forward for me those years, you had either Paul Curran, Keith Barr, Eamon Heary, Mick Deegan, you know, they're all fully grown men, you know, who knew how to play football, you know, what it was about.
There was a funny one there that you mentioned, Heary, on your Lake Regale. You were running up into some little schmozzle or whatever it was, and he's right behind you, and he says, "I'm right behind you, Trevor." Don't try anything here, or you're in trouble.
Yeah, like lift your hand here, and you know, I could break your jaw if I wanted, because I'm behind you. And I see you. And now, like, Eamon had a tough reputation. Now, I have to say, he never laid a finger on me. Played it 100% up front, fair and square. You know, there was no hassle with it. But I'd seen enough of him growing up, Mark and David Beggy. You know that he's not a fella you mess with. You know, he's well able to play football, but he could play it either way too.
Yeah, well, come here, Amanda played with you in those 94 and the 95 games, and Amanda, you know very well, Colm O'Rourke joins us on the line now. Colm, how's it going?
Great. The weather is beautiful and we're all alive and well, and sure, things are getting better on the GAA front, so there's very little to complain about.
Very, very little. Come here, I suppose you're taking credit for nurturing this man and taking care of him and bringing him up through the ranks and taking care of him in his first 2 years of senior, and two player of the year is pretty much all you're doing.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I did it single-handedly. Took complete care of him. Moulded him into the man he is. It had nothing to do with his mother and father or sister or club or our teachers in school or anything else. It was totally just down to my influence.
I'm sure, all joking aside, Trevor, Colm would have looked after you in 94, 95 when you came in, because I'm sure it was a daunting dressing room to walk into.
There was nothing to look. He didn't have to be looked after now, I can assure you of that.
Yeah, he looked after in 92 and 93 with Screen as well, you know. But my dad was the biggest influence on my career. And then after that, you had, you know, Colm and Sean were the next two, you know. And you know, so I had a funny relationship with Colm initially, because as a kid, you're going to watch Screen playing club matches and he's your hero, you know, and then you go and see him playing in Croke Park with Meade, you know, and he's your hero. And then I went into St. Pat's and he was teaching there. And if Colm likes you, he kind of slips you off, you know. He doesn't say nice things. He's witty about it. But by the time 92 came around, I joined him on the Screen senior team, and after maybe 30 years of trying to win senior championships, I helped Screen and Colm to win their first county medal. So, I was happy to win the medals for myself, but just knowing how much it would have meant to Colm and lots of other Screen players and my own parents and grandparents, you know, Screen people died in the war, you know, it was a massive thing for me to make a contribution to that.
Yeah, that was huge. I suppose, at what age did you start noticing Trevor, Colm? Like, was he a late bloomer, or was he kind of earmarked from very young that he was something special?
He was always special, but he was small. He was quite small when he was at primary school, and I think even at secondary school. I think Trevor, if it was in your later years, you got a bit taller. And I remember the juvenile team in St. Pat's, I think you were one of the smallest on it. And quite slightly built, so
I was always kind of good, but you know, I'd say from about 16 on, I started to improve. Maybe I got a little bit bigger. I was never very big, but a little bit stronger. But I made some progress in 16 and 17 and 18. I was improving every year, and so coming into the Screen senior team is a great place to progress. The Meade minor team, we got to two All-Ireland, you know, that's 2 years of county minor training and playing Ulster League matches against the best Ulster teams and playing challenge matches against the Newry colleges for St. Pat's, and that, you know, it was great. I did make good progress at 16, 17, 18, yeah.
Right, and so when you were smaller then, as an underage player, did you play the normal thing, would you play a corner forward then, or were you always out in centre half forward position?
Yeah, like when you'd be 9, you'd be playing under 12, when you'd be 11, you'd be playing under 14, you know, you'd be wing forward or wing back, you know, you'd be out on the periphery a little bit, you know, but so if they don't do it nowadays as underage, you can only play at your own age or one age up, you know, but, you know, yeah, be out wing forward, wing back, and kind of keeping out of the waves.
Colm, is he being hard on himself for his performance in 94, his debut year in the Leinster final against Dublin?
Yeah, well, I think the first thing anyway that you were saying there about Screen, we won the championship in 92. I had played in 5 losing finals before that, and we wouldn't have won in 92 if he didn't come along. So Trevor has helped certainly a crowd of us win our first championship, and he was only 17 at the time. So it's a big expectation then going on to the Meade team at 19, 20 and trying to play in Leinster finals against Dublin. And I think we all had that learning process, and for him, it was basically the same as the rest of us. I certainly didn't play very well in the first few years for Meath in the big games, but he made a much bigger contribution, particularly winning the league final against Down in 94 when he was excellent, and he was entrusted with taking the frees too, which was a big thing at the time.
Yeah, that was a big thing, Trevor, because Brent Stafford was such a legend, and I'm not sure, was he on and off the team, or did you get the frees off him?
Yeah, just when I started in February 94, I think playing Galway, and I was wing forward, and Brian Stafford was full forward. Brian broke a thumb, and by necessity, I got the free taking duties for a few weeks until Brian was recuperating. And like, it was handy kicking frees from Meath in those days, because you had Colm or Tommy Dowd in at full forward. Like, they'd get fouled in around the 14-yard line, and you'd be tapping over 7 or 8 frees, and like, not a word of a lie, but there'd be none from 55 yards, you know. So you'd be getting great scores to your name, but there wouldn't be difficult frees. And then I suppose when Brian recovered and got back on the team, because I was getting 7 or 8 frees, I was still on them, and then missed two I should have got against Dublin, the Leinster final. And yeah, that was me off the frees. After that, and Brian was the free taker in 1995, and I wasn't practicing them at all. And right. Then Brian in the Leinster final in 95, the first half, he went over on an ankle and had to go off. And next thing, I was given the ball for 3 frees in the second half into the hill, and I hadn't been practicing at all. And the first one scraped the top of the crossbar and went over, and then I got the other two. So it was a big day for me to actually score frees into Hill 16 in 95, even though we were beaten by 10 points, and I was able to take something from it, you know, but it could have all gone wrong because I hadn't been practicing that year.
But that's unusual that you wouldn't have been practicing together, like even picking Brian's brain.
Well, to be fair to Brian, he came, when I was on the Meath Minors, he came down to screen pitch one night and spent an hour with me when I was 17, just with his routine, what his mindset was, and spent an hour with me. And basically what he told me, I implemented that for the rest of my days after that. And he was on the senior team at the time. He was a big hero, you know, and So the only coach I ever got in terms of free taking, the rest was just, I worked it out myself, or myself and my dad worked it out. But no, you go into the park tossing yourself on a Wednesday evening with a bag of balls and practice. You wouldn't really, as us, practice together or anything like that.
Right.
Probably a bit awkward to do that together, you know, if you're kind of not rivals, you know, but...
Kind of, yeah. Breathing down. I suppose, Colm, you got the majority of his brilliant passes for screen, because you're only with Meath for 2 years together. I was giving Trevor the credit for introducing those diagonal balls into the game on a regular basis.
The ball off both feet. Yeah. I always thought his best place, when his best performances for screen were from centre back, and I think there was some place that he didn't get an opportunity to play with Meade because he was playing Meade for another try with me. But it was thought that maybe half back line would have been a better position for him, and he'd have an even bigger influence. But his ball at the time, Meath forwards in those two finals, that I think that Ollie Murphy and Graham Geraghty and got great scores and often goals. But if you spoon back a little bit on the tape, you'll find that the ball that got came from Trevor a lot of the time.
Yeah, no, exactly. Like, I mean, you could win it anyway, so you were probably getting balls down on top of you, whereas Trevor was able to put it left and right.
Yeah, well, Martin O'Connell used to decide that he was going to put them down on top of them. He would see would there be snow on it coming down.
That was a feature of Martin. We've done some nostalgia games. That was Martin O'Connell just launched every ball that he won a great ball, and then just it went.
Oh yeah. He decided that once he got it, he was entitled to do like with it. So, but Trevor was a bit more subtle in the ball that he would give. And obviously, the lads inside, if you're in the full forward line, you profited from that sort of accuracy. a diagonal ball, and it came at a perfect angle too if you were out in front.
Yeah. Could you sense a changing of the guard then, Colin? Well, there obviously was a changing of the guard with the good minor teams under 21 in 94, 95. Sean was trying to filter them in.
Yeah, well, we got to Hammerin in 95.
Yeah.
Dublin beat us by 10 points. I was 37 or 38 at the time, so I was washed up anyway. But Staff and Bernie and a few more, Bob O'Malley, I think, we were all sort of, basically was the last remnants of 87, 88. Were washed out in 95. So that was the end of the line. And then Sean came along and built a new team, which was an amazing achievement. And I always said that there was more, that the best players that played for in the country at that time, they were nearly all playing for Meath. If you took Darren Fay and Geraghty and Mark O'Reilly and John McDermott and Trevor and Ollie Murphy, and Graham at full forward, they were the best at that time in the country. So Meath had some individual players.
Yeah, and we were just talking with Trevor there about that 96 Leinster final. Trevor was saying it's his favourite game with Meath. And, nobody would have given Meath a chance that year at all.
And it was a game for the development of that team. They may not have won as much afterwards if they didn't win. But then I think that match on either way. It was a fairly tight match, and Meath developed from that, and obviously won in 96. The Meath team of 99, I thought that Trevor was on. I thought that was a really excellent team.
Yeah, no, it definitely was. Come here, Trevor, you were talking about winning everything when you were young. You were 21 and 24 when you won your All-Irelands. I suppose Colin was at the other end of his career. You were saying you would prefer, as it turns out, to win them later in your career rather than early.
Yeah, that might maybe sound a funny thing to say, but I suppose my county career petered out a little bit. You know, I suppose the last 2 years we got beaten by Fermanagh, you know, one in Clonus, one in Enniskillen, you know, and it just petered out. And at that stage, you know, my play was disimproving. The team was probably not as good as it used to be. Modern methods had taken over in Armagh and Tyrone, and we were suddenly behind other teams in the way we were approaching things. So yeah, my career kind of petered out, really. Don't get me wrong, I'm delighted to have the success I did, you know, but if you were to choose it, you kind of have a few close ones for a few years and then finish up winning a few at the end, you know, and go out on a real big high, you know, maybe a Peter Canavan might have done it, or, you know, but that's only a small thing. You're saying, what way would you like to have won your All-Ireland, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
Someone
exactly
asked me that once, and I kind of said that was the way I'd prefer to have done it, you know.
Yeah, I think
in politics, column without interrupting you, the famous thing in politics, all political careers end in failure, and it's nearly always the same with sport, isn't it? It's
yeah,
rare that a person gets to choose to go out on a high.
Yeah, I'm sure there's I'm sure you would probably prefer to win the Merley column because you had the opposite experience. And I suppose you want what you didn't have. Like, I mean, imagine the pressure you were under not having won one before 87.
No, but I can understand Trevor's point of view. I'm glad that it went the way it did for me to win them at the end, because it certainly molds you as a person to more the fact that you have experienced a lot of defeats along the way. And I think that in some regards, there's no harm for a person to taste defeat before you get success, because the other way around, you know, you can go off maybe with some regrets. But from my point of view, even though we ended up losing, I think, two Leinster finals, the last two I played in, we lost. So, but it was a nice way. I was 30 before I played in the All-Ireland final. I hadn't played for 12 years at that stage. So it was a good way. And it was also very nice to play with fellas who had experienced similar failures and then come up with the goods at the end, with Jerry McEntee and Mick Lyons and William Hayes and Joe Castles and people like that I'd have had a massive respect for. So it was nice to see them speak.
Come here, before you go, Colm, I know you're under pressure there. I have to ask you about the 91 final and not being able to play and then playing so bloody well when you came on. Were you just like a bull in a china shop watching it from the bench? And, you know, or do you think, looking back, you should have started?
Well, Jeff McEntee and Jack Finn, who was our team doctor, were very, very dubious about me playing at all. And they would be the sort of people who would have said, if your leg was broken, yeah, you sure you can play. So, like, I had very bad pneumonia in the week leading up to the match. Like, with the benefit of hindsight, I think I could have played a bit longer. But, you know, that's the hand we were dealt with at the time. And maybe we could have played a bit better. But it was funny things. Nick Lyons got injured before halftime. And I said in the dressing room at halftime, it's funny the way people think he's highly organised. And I said to Mick, sure, if you come off, I go on. Mick says, why don't you play on? It was a sort of lighthearted moment. And as it turned out, Mick wasn't able to play on and had to come off.
So, right.
I could have gone on a bit earlier, all right, but I think Alan Brown then had to go on for Mick. So it was just funny the way things turned out. It would have been nice to win it. And certainly, like, you know, we all look back on matches that we'd like to have won, and I suppose that's the one that got away.
Yeah, definitely. I said Bernard Flynn would have put his hand up to get you on a little bit earlier as well.
Yeah, well, Bernard, of course, playing with Bernard and Brian in the full forward line, we played so many years together there. We knew each other so well, and he was brilliant in the final that day. I think Bernard scored 5 points from play.
Yeah.
It was probably his best performance. So it didn't need much extra. But, like, Down had an excellent team too, and we should never forget that. Like, Greg Blaney, Mickey Lind and James McCartan, and their forward line was as good as ever played in Croke Park.
They were. Colm, come here. Thanks very much. I know you're under pressure there. We'll let you go.
And it was nice to be on with the I have to say, the best footballer I think I've played with. So thanks very much.
Thanks, Colm.
Thanks, Colm.
Okay, we lost that compliment, did we, Trevor? I don't think I did.
typical Colin, yeah.
So the best player that's ever played for Beep, maybe it was Screen or Mead, we're not sure. I would say Mead.
Screen under nines, probably.
But that was it. Like, I mean, I suppose giving into a full forward line of Flynn, Stafford and O'Rourke would be a nice job as well, Trevor. Mead have been lucky with full forward lines, I suppose.
Yeah, and you know, and I suppose that was, I suppose, the difference between then and maybe now. Just if the current team just had, you know, a couple of those real top inside forwards, make a massive difference. And you know, it gives the rest of the team great confidence. You know, if you're out the field and you say, well, we've such and such inside, like, if we get the ball into him, you know, on his day, he'll score no matter who's marking him, you know. And it gives the team a great bit of hope and a bit of confidence. So you know, and it's hard to know, can you coach these players, or do these players just come along, you know? I'm probably thinking more they just come along, and we were just lucky that a number of them came along over 20 years, you know. And you need that for success, you know.
Do you ever think of yourself in the modern game, Trevor? Because, like, nowadays there's not so many breaks because a lot of the kickouts go shorter to the wings, you know. And then you're obviously talking about sweepers, so your initial long ball might not always be on. Like, the 90s football suited your game perfect. Like, I'm not saying if you're playing now, you'd evolve and be a different, you know, brilliant player. But do you ever think of putting yourself into the modern game, or how you would enjoy it?
Oh, absolutely. I do think, Colm. You know, like, I benefited, you only had one person marking you, you know, and you had space in the forward line, and you know, life would be more difficult nowadays, there's no doubt. But at the same time, you know, you're looking for players now that'll break down a blanket defence or unlock a defence, you know, and, you know, you would get the ball handed to you because a team would retreat and, you know, you'd come out with the ball, Mead would come out with the ball, and there'd be hand pass here and there, and you'd get on the ball and you'd get your chance to, you know, it'd be more maybe with a hand pass or a little dinked foot pass. So I do think there would be a role for me in the modern game. You know, it'd be a different role, you know, and as much as you talk about blanket defences, there's still loads of games I go to and, you know, a fella's just looked up, there's a long ball on, you know. Yeah. There really is, you know. No, not for very long, but it's still on if fellas would just look up. But there's just, I suppose, the habits nowadays with a lot of fellas, the first thing is just to stop and turn back, you know, and you've some genius behind you calling for the ball by the time you get it, you know. So you don't even look forward because someone is calling for it and you automatically turn back to him. So so I think there is still room for that early long ball given in to a good forward. But you'd have a different role in the modern game. But
I think we might be seeing that coming. Yeah, we might be seeing it coming back slowly. Isn't that it? Maybe a little bit more that early ball might be on. But I agree that the players that don't even look up, I can't understand their kind of thought process at all. It doesn't make sense. Come here, the 2001 semi-final. So you hammered Kerry. And then, it's in a weird way. Like, I mean, that wasn't an old Meath team. Like, I mean, it was still a relatively young Meath team, and you destroyed Kerry, and you were hot favourites to go in against Galway in the final, and you lost that badly, and you never recovered from that, Trevor, did you?
Never recovered. No. The following year, we had Donegal in a round four of the qualifiers, and we lost by 2 points. We nearly got a goal at the very end, you know, and we went up to Fermanagh and got ambushed, you know, by an up-and-coming Fermanagh team. And then fellas started drifting away from the team, just whatever it did. I suppose, you know, when you've won a couple of All-Irelands and, you know, it's easy to say, yeah, I've done my bit here, I've done enough, you know. Myself, I'd played 12 years for me, that's a plus 2 years, full years at County Minor. You know, so I felt I'd 14 years done and I'd given everything to it, you know. So, I suppose for myself, I felt at that stage there was a huge amount of pressure on me to play really, really well because the team needed me to play really, really well, you know. And you just weren't as, you know, as good as you were and you were getting marked tightly. And, you know, you have to say there was an element of being under huge pressure. I put myself under huge pressure. And it's supposed to come to the point where you say, oh, I think I've had enough, you know. And I really enjoyed then. I played another 8 years with Green, you know, and I really enjoyed, you know, less pressure, you know. It was more easy going, you know, and you could enjoy your football for a number of years. And I was delighted I had Green to go back to. I think if you to finish county football and you come to a full stop, you know, that's a difficult one to handle, you know. Or if your club is maybe junior club, you're not playing at a high standard, it's a big fall off, you know. So I was lucky to be still playing at a high enough level for the 8 years or so.
Yeah, outside of that, because you must have won county titles with Screen with three or four different teams. You know, you spent nearly 20 years with county titles for them.
Yeah, we did, exactly, yeah. We won five over 20 years and we lost two finals. So winning five out of seven was a good return. We had a game with yourselves, of course, in a Leinster final in 2004. Yeah. I was midfield that day and I spent a lot of time trying to get back to help our full back slow you down, but I never got back quick enough to do that. You had a good game yourself that day, but... yeah, the Leinster club, as well, that's one medal I'd love to have, you know. We probably had a chance in 1999, the year we won the All-Ireland. I was probably at my best, John McDermott was at his best, but we won the Meath Championship that year, but it was too late to enter the Leinster club because we'd been in Australia in October and we just didn't get a chance to enter Leinster that year. Right. Not saying we would have won it, but I think that was the chance. Screen has never won a Leinster club and, you know, that's just the one thing, you'd love a Leinster club medal. But listen, we're happy enough.
I think you'd be happy enough. Yeah, I'll swap you one if you want. It's in a weird way. You lost to Laois in 2004 in the championship, and then you lost to Port Laois in the club that year. It's like, I mean, your last game or your last, well, it wasn't your last year with Meath, was it? You played 2005 and you were injured for that whole year.
I played the league in 2005 and then I dislocated a shoulder just before the first round of the championship against Dublin and I just didn't get back for the championship that year. And I found with that injury, I'd worked really, really hard on the cruciate ligament recovering from, you know, any other injury I had, and I just discovered with the dislocated shoulder, I just wasn't putting the same work in, and sort of dawned on me, my hunger had kind of waned a little bit. And I suppose I was working hard in the physio clinic at the time. We were starting to build a house here and you just needed to pay bills and you needed to work harder. And I found myself landing into training after a hard day's work, and you were just exhausted, you know. And
you kind of know when you have enough training. Yeah, you know when you have enough of it, really, don't you?
Yeah, there was a number of reasons, and they all added up, and I was happy enough. Yeah, I made the right decision. Yeah, for me. Yeah.
And I presume Colin Coyle tried to get you back then, because he got Darren Fay to come back. Was it 07 he came? He started as manager.
He did, yeah. I missed the year. Eamon Barry took over from Sean. I didn't play that year. And then Colin did ask me the following year, and I stuck to me line. Now, I often wondered after, maybe if he'd asked me again or come back a bit stronger, I might have, because I had a great time for Colin. At the same time, no, I knew myself. A little bit of hunger just wasn't there. I suppose... I felt nearly my last couple of years at Meath, if Sean had dropped me or taken me off, it would have been a bit of a kick up the backside or just something, you know. I just might have got a little bit more out of myself the last couple of years, but he was so good to me, he never did that, you know. And I just felt, you know, maybe some of that might have made a difference, but no, I'd say for the reasons I outlined there, I made my decision, and yeah, no, kind of happy enough I stuck with it.
Just one, it was a comment that you made. You were player manager for Screen for a couple of years, and you said, I suppose I learned really that fellas are kind of in the game for themselves primarily, which is fair enough. It's a team game, but it probably comes down to yourself playing first and then being part of a winning team. And I always thought that, I don't know, the quote just kind of struck a chord with me, because I don't know, I always played for myself and my own enjoyment. I don't know if that's a selfish thing to say or not, but for me, if I wasn't enjoying it, I was a waste of time being there. So for me, I came first always and the team came second. And like, I don't have a great record of lots of dropping off panels and all. I don't know if that's the right mindset or the wrong one.
Yeah, well, I suppose if you said to me, would you prefer for me to play brilliantly and lose? Well, I get more satisfaction from playing brilliantly and losing if the team lost than me playing terrible and the team winning. You know, if I played poorly, I'd be hard on myself, you know. So it's my own personal performance probably came first. But I suppose if I played well, it was a better chance the team was going to win, you know. But I suppose I never really spent much time as a sub in my career. And when you're sort of player manager and you're maybe dropping a fella or substituting a fella, or, you know, it was kind of new territory for me. You know, I remember in one of the championship matches with the club, we were a few points up, and one of my players had been injured with an ankle injury, but he told me he was right, you know. So I said, right, bring this fella on now, you know, get a bit of game time into him. And he didn't do well when he came on, you know. And the guy was taken off. I was at Mass the following day, and I come to shaking hands with the person beside you to sign a piece. His aunt was behind me, and she wouldn't shake hands with me because I was after taking him off. Gee, this is hard. They're going. The outside manager doesn't ever have to put up with that now. I learned a lot. You know, it's a difficult thing to be player manager and to be still playing, you know. And I did it for a year, and then Liam Harnan came into the club, and in the second year we won the championship, and I played well for Liam, you know. So,
right.
You know, yeah.
I'd say
more for playing.
Yeah, but I'd say player manager, like, you're in the heat of battle, you're trying to focus on your own game, and then you're trying to, you know, see who's coming on and coming off. Like, I mean, how did you work that? Did you trust the selector to make a change, or did you, you know, keep it on yourself?
I had good fellow with me. I had my dad with me as well, you know. And it's always something, you're trying to pick a team and you're trying to fit everyone in. And I ended up putting myself corner forward or wing forward just so we could put other fellas in their better position. And, I'd say someone else would have put me centre forward, midfield, or somewhere, you know, and then I would have played better, you know.
I get you.
I suppose it's just coming from the county set up to the club, you know, and you want things done really well, and I felt I could, you know, have a real good setup there for the club. And the setup was good, but just in terms of picking teams and making substitutions and all that, you know, I think I'm maybe more cut out for playing and just managing myself than managing 25 fellas.
Well, either one or the other, playing or managing, but not playing and managing, I suppose. You really bit off a lot there, in fairness.
Yeah.
There's no doubt about that.
And I remember 2 years after that, we won the championship, you know, and the captain, when he was lifting the cup and he was complimenting Liam Harnan, and rightly so, but he kind of said, like, for a couple of years, we were going nowhere as a club, you know, and I said, thanks very much. But I don't think he was really having a go at me, but he was kind of saying, you know, we played really well this year under Liam, and we did, you know.
Brilliant. And geez, I'd like to have seen your face when he was saying that. I'd say it like an innocent comment. I'd say your face dropped.
Yeah. But I know we're good about it.
Okay. Right, come here. We'll come back with 10 questions, Trevor, to finish up.
Is the little dink fist pass from a crowded area into that D we're talking about, where Bernard, I've talked to Bernard about, Bernard's very patient, but this little dink ball, you know, the one in a crowded area where it's a fist pass, the weight is taken out, hits the ground and it bounces into a fella's chest, and there's consternation then in around the D and in around that area. Watch for this in the semis and the final. Do you know the one I'm talking about? That little fisted ball that's just bounced in a crowded area, but it gets to the
yeah,
body.
You have said it three times.
It's in around it. But you're looking at me, you're looking
out
at
of
me
a crowded area, isn't it?
You're looking at me with such a confused head in you. It's like I was talking about you trying to get a point in coppers or something there in a crowded area. Yeah, watch for it.
All right, so 10 questions around Trevor. If you weren't playing for me, this is number one. If you weren't playing for me, what county would you like to have played for?
In the 90s, Derry, they had a serious set of defenders, Anthony Toll at midfield. They'd only won one All-Ireland, but they won the league four times, and we could never beat them in the league. And it was always a hard day's work playing against any of those Derry defenders. So they were probably maybe a little bit short in the forward line. So might have got me place on that team. A little bit more, maybe.
Okay, that's a good answer. Number two, your worst ever game for the seniors now, I suppose.
I'd say the worst one was a qualifier match in Navan against Loud, and we were terrible, and I was terrible, and we got two late goals to win it by a point in about 5 minutes of extra time. Graham the winning goal, and we'd been beaten by Dublin the week before, and Sean, and we tried some new tactical thing and it completely didn't work for us. And yeah, I started badly and couldn't get into the game. And yeah, no, that was shocking performance for me. Yeah.
Okay. Number three, your most difficult opponent.
Hank Traynor in training with Meade was the most difficult opponent. Hank was very quick over the first few yards. Very, very tight. He could nip forward and get a score. But Hank in training was the one fella you didn't want to be marking you.
Right. Okay. That's an interesting one. He was playing in 04. I think Ross Munley gave him a bit of a roast, but maybe he was getting a bit older at that time.
Yeah. But any meet forward of that era, Hank was the one in training you didn't mark, and he was really, really tight.
Right. Okay. Number four, if you could sign one player for me during your time, who would it be?
I think Seamus Moynihan was one of the best players in the country when I was, you know, in the 90s, and played for UCC centre-back. He'd be coming forward, but he could defend. He could play anywhere in the defence. To me, he was just a terrific footballer, so Seamus Moynihan for me.
Very good. Number five, your favourite position and your best position?
I think centre-half-back was my favourite position, particularly when in my early 20s when I was mobile, fit. You know, it's place. If you have a good midfield in front of you, you can read the play, you can influence it, you can help your other defenders doubling up. Played there with UCD, and Kieran McManus was midfield for us, and he was only young at the time, and he'd keep an eye on the centre forward for me, and I could play my game. And especially in those real tight college pitches, you know, you could really influence the game. So centre back for me.
And your best position, same.
Yeah, at that age, in my early 20s, centre-back would have been my best position, I think, yeah.
All right, the hardest or dirtiest player you've marked?
Ooh, you get into trouble with this one. I just said the dirtiest blow I ever got, it was in the winter of 95. I was playing for UCD in a challenge match against Dublin, up in Belfield, and a Dublin referee, and stupid me for playing in that game. I was the only Meade man on the UCD team, and I cleared the ball out of defence, and about 5 seconds later I got an awful elbow in the jaw from some Dublin forward, and I thought my jaw was broken now. And Dublin referee, nothing. I think we might have got a free for it, but there was nothing done to the culprit now. But I could say that was nearly the only really, really dirty belt I ever got in my career now.
Really? Even in club football in Mead? Like, I mean, no, I don't want to be disrespectful, but it would be known for kind of hard football.
You know, and I marked Liam Harnan and Kevin Foley and you know, these fellas in club matches, they wouldn't lay a finger on you, you know.
Right.
You know, you get an odd lay tackle or someone might say something to you, but in terms of a dirty player.
Yeah.
I remember playing Leash in an under-21 game.
Oh, God, yeah. 94.
There was a fella booked before the game for standing on my toes in the national anthem, but like, you know, it was no, apart from that belt I got against Dublin in a challenge match, I couldn't say I marked a dirty player, you know. No.
That night, that 94 Leicester final, there was no prisoners taken that day anyways. That I remember I was too young for that, but I remember being at it. That was a tough game.
Yeah, there was extra time, there was a replay, there was about 5 sent off potentially, you know. Yeah, that was action in that one, all right.
There definitely was. Number 7, what's the best advice a manager ever gave you?
Well, I think just Sean Boylan would kind of just say, listen, just get on with things, you know, whether the other team score 2 goals early on, or if you get a man sent off, or if your tongue is hanging out, you just get on with it, you know, and... I think it's great advice, you know, like, don't be complaining, don't be standing there with your hands out, you know, saying the ball wasn't great, you know, just get on with things. And I'd hear myself saying that to my own kids or kids I coach, you know.
Right, okay, because one thing that jumps into my mind there is Bernard Flynn is after getting a dreadful launched ball off Martin O'Connell and it goes over the end line, and Bernard Flynn doesn't even put his hands up to give out or anything, he gets on with it. So maybe that was the advice Sean Boylan gave everyone.
Yeah, I think it's good advice, you know, just get on with things, you know.
Yeah, okay. Number 8, player you most admired from another team?
I think apart from Seamus Moynihan, Peter Canavan was the other real, real top player of my era, and always tightly marked from a young age. Wasn't a big man. You know, the Australians tried to rough him up and he didn't take a backward step, you know. So, terrific player, Peter Canavan, absolutely.
Okay, number 9. What other manager would you like to have played under? I presume for me, it's at senior level.
For me, I suppose probably Colm O'Rourke. If it wasn't Sean, you know, I suppose Colm had you know success with the Ireland team in 98, 99, you know, and had some success with Simonstown and success with St Pat's Secondary School in Navan, you know, winning All Ireland. So. I would say Colm if it wasn't Sean. Yeah.
Okay, number 10, last one, where do you keep your medals, your All-Stars, your old jerseys, your cut-off jerseys, all your memorabilia and awards?
I just went up to the Hill of Tara and dug a hole and put it all in there. X marks the spot. It's got a thing with medals, you know. I showed them to the kids there one day and for about 10 seconds they went, oh God, that's brilliant, yeah, and then that was it, you know. The funny things, medals, you know, if you hang them up at home, your house might get robbed, you know.
Yeah.
If you put them in the bank, no one ever gets to see them, you know. I often think of, you know, if you win the Super Bowl in the American football, you get a ring to wear, you know, a special ring, and it's a more functional thing than a medal, you know. You can actually wear this around every day, you know, whereas the medal, you just put it somewhere. It's great to have it, you know, and to have won it, but I often think it could be a more functional thing you could get than just a medal.
Yeah, your All-Star Awards, surely you're on the mantelpiece.
All-Star Awards are in the piano room in the house, yeah, just on the mantelpiece, and plenty of dust on them.
Any jerseys up around the house, or are you into framing jerseys or anything like that?
No jerseys frame. Now, I did through the attic there during the lockdown. I spent a week up in the attic, and all the old gear and all the stuff you get when you're on a county team, polo shirts, you know, socks, shorts, you get way too much stuff. So it's all up in the attic, all the jerseys I swapped, all the ones I kept. I know where they are, but yeah, they're up in the attic and they're probably musty and sweaty and... the old woolly heavy jerseys, you know, so I don't think anyone's ever going to wear them.
You might send me down a sleeveless one, Trevor Giles one there sometime for my birthday or something.
Yeah. Well, that one is in the GAA Museum, actually, in Crow Park. So
is it?
That's where that one is at the moment, anyway, yeah.
Very good. Very good. Really clear. I'm not going to keep up any more of your time, Trevor. It was an absolute pleasure watching you play and playing against you the odd time. Thanks very much for doing the show.
Colin, very welcome. Enjoy that. All the best.
Yet. It took me a long time to get here.
Both players have spoken with each other and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
But these fellas will get such a f***ing shell shock next Saturday evening that we'll put them back in their f***ing houses for f***ing 10 years.